What's popping, everybody? Welcome back into the Expired Popcorn Podcast, where we talk about the fresh and the forgotten in film. I am your host, Stone.
And I'm Zach.
And today we are talking about problems, three of them, with the body, or so we thought when we got into Three Body Problem with Netflix, the series that we are talking about for the episode today. This was huge for Netflix. They spent $160 million on this. Everyone, did you read the book, or did you know about the book going into it?
I didn't know anything about this.
Okay, so I knew it was sci-fi.
I knew that.
We knew the creators of Game of Thrones. What's their name again?
D.B. Weinoff and, right? Benoff. D.B. Weinoff.
D.B. Wise and David Benioff.
I'm mixing their names up, but yeah.
Not the easiest names, but yeah. So this is their... The big deal here, because the whole thing with Game of Thrones is the fact that the show is very good until they ran out of material from George R.R. Martin. And then everyone found out that these creators weren't the best. They're not good at adapting material that they don't have. So that was the good thing about Three Body Problem, was that the whole thing is done. So hopefully they can adapt it really well. What did you think about Three Body Problem?
I thought it was good. It was, I agree with, like, they are very good at adapting material that already exists. They are not very creative when it comes to making their own original stuff. You can see that by the last three episodes of the final season of Game of Thrones.
That's a whole nother topic.
I
feel like that the last season of Game of Thrones should have been three seasons, but they were just trying to rush the whole thing because they didn't know what to do. But anyways, carry on.
There's some like weird parts to the show that I just felt like maybe they'll be answered in a second or third season, or maybe they're answered in the second and third book. But overall, I thought it was a good show. It was very sci-fi until it wasn't. But yeah, I enjoyed the show. It was a lot to watch, especially this week. Just like life-wise, I needed something this week that was easy to digest. This was not it, so it took me extra long to watch the show and process what was happening. I had to watch so many extra videos and read so many extra articles explaining what was happening.
You probably know more than I do then.
But once I understood what was happening in like after the second episode, I was able to follow along for the most part. But it's definitely not the type of show you can just put on in the background.
No, yeah, you really have to pay attention to it. So I looked it up. So there's three books. So the Three Body Problem is the name of the first book.
Yeah.
Second book looks like The Dark Forest, and the last one's Death's End. So what I thought was really cool about it, yes, like you said, sci-fi, has to do with aliens, is the fact that I've never seen anything like it before. I was still being surprised.
Yeah.
We talked about it. Anybody who's listening, who's watched the show, there is definitely a turning point. Huge turning point in episode 5, something involving a boat and something involving an eye. And it's kind of like you're getting two tonally different shows. There's a lot of suspense and mystery when it comes to the first part. And then everything becomes astronomical, in a sense, in the second part of the show. I enjoyed both just because of how mysterious the beginning was when it comes to, this is in the commercials, but the stars, they flash on and off. Why are they flashing on and off? People are seeing numbers in their mind and they don't necessarily know what it means. People are killing themselves because of this. So basically the story, I guess we should recap a little bit, but you follow a bunch of physicists and the science isn't working anymore. The world doesn't make sense. Why is this happening? Their jobs don't make sense anymore. They can't explain anything.
All the scientists are dying.
Exactly. Scientists are dying for some unknown reason. Benedict Wong, who we'll talk about later, he plays a detective who's going to these murder victims' houses when all these accidents happen, and he's trying to connect the dots throughout the series. And basically, we find out that there are flashbacks to China in the 60s and 70s, and we follow a woman as she has first faced persecution, especially against her family, and she has a very tough upbringing, and she makes contact in a way with an alien species. And the things that are happening in the present are because of what she did in the past. And it's very interesting, the lore and just what these aliens can do, especially in episode 5. You find out exactly why everything is happening. But something that's very interesting, if you want to talk about it, is explain the virtual reality.
Yeah, so they get these, like, helmets. They're, like, half helmets, kind of. But they're basically VR goggles that take them into this, like, this world where they have to figure out why the world is dying, or, like, what's going on. So anytime you put on the helmet, you also have to be invited to play this game, basically. But it's not like a typical VR game or like action game where you would go. It's not Ready Player One at all, where like everything's action. It's a lot of math and physics and like problem solving that you have to do to and observations to understand what's happening in the VR world. But it is basically a way for the aliens to communicate with whoever is wearing the helmet.
Yeah, but the aliens are like recruiting people.
Yeah, the aliens are using it as like a recruitment tool.
Yeah, very interesting. I would say I forgot, but because we talked about Game of Thrones a little bit, there's three actors in this primarily that I can think of off the top of my head. Jonathan Pryce, who he played like a priest, I believe, in Game of Thrones. I remember he was involved with Cersei Lannister and everything that happened, like the green explosions that she did. I think that's when he passed. John Bradley, who was like Jon Snow's best friend up at the wall.
Yeah.
And then Sam Tarly. I have a tough time. I have a Liam Cunningham, who plays a big part in this series, Three Body Problem. I can't remember his character in Three Body Problem's name is Thomas Wade. I can't primarily remember. There's a lot of moving parts in Game of Thrones. I can't remember
He was with the oldest Baratheon's daughter, the one that had the scale problem.
Like the Red Witch, right? He did a lot with the Red Witch.
And he ends up like befriending Jon Snow in like the later seasons and like travels with him and stuff.
Yeah. So it is really cool to see those actors like, you know, back in a role like this.
Yeah, watching it, I was like, this is Game of Thrones, like very clearly. These are the creators. They brought three people from Game of Thrones over.
But I think the primary, honestly, I've heard that in the books, you don't necessarily get a huge focus on the physicist that much. Mm-hmm. I know there's a character who's gender swapped, who Augie is actually a male in the book and doesn't really play a huge role, but they gave her a lot more characterization with her like nanotechnology that she has.
That's interesting. I felt like Augie was being set up to be like the main character in the show, and then it was Jin.
Yeah, very interesting. I think Jin, honestly, they do a pretty good job balancing out everyone. I will say that Jin is probably the main character. She's like the biggest role for sure. But even, especially, we won't say about Saul, his role at the very end, I thought was very interesting and made sense for the aliens and what the aliens could do. I was like, that's kind of a genius idea when it comes to science fiction. But I was impressed. And then especially, so when we talk about the split, that happens at episode 5. What happens? No spoilers, but this is not a spoiler because it happens right at the beginning. But Will Downing has cancer, and that's something he's dealing with throughout the entire series. What happens with his character? I was just enamored with how bonkers it was, and I was very impressed that it was happening. And like I said, it kind of is dumb, but kind of cool at the same time to me. what was going on. So the show definitely surprises you, I will say.
Yeah.
I could not have predicted what happened to Will Downing's character, I could tell you that.
It has a very different way of approaching science fiction too, because it's not like trying to stay in the lane of like one type of science fiction. Like Star Wars is all aliens, all space, like stuff like that. But then you have like Ready Player One, like I mentioned earlier, where it's all video game stuff. This is very much like it has aliens, it has video games, it has nanotechnology. Like it's kind of,
I feel like it's more analytical just because what we're focused on is physicists.
Yeah, like it's
there's a lot more interesting predicaments that they would think of and they would do.
Yeah. And it's like it's almost like a space race, because they're like major plot is they're like racing against the aliens, basically trying to stop an invasion later on. But it's not really a space race. It's really just a, how do we stop this without them ever finding out that we're trying to?
Yeah, which, yeah, it's a very interesting predicament. Like I said, that's why I really like, we won't speak, but Saul and his character, and the figures that they come up with, how to defeat these aliens or what they can do to defend themselves against it. I thought it was really very interesting. That's the whole thing. I just think the show is very interesting with its sci-fi concepts. Everything involving the virtual reality, sometimes that went over my head just because there's a lot of physics involved. Not a whole lot of physics involved, but also I feel like that will translate more in more seasons. We talked about it. That is one, you get a lot of your answers solved in the show if you're curious about the flashing lights, if you're about the numbers that people are seeing. The one thing that you don't get necessarily solved, that I spoke to Zach about this at the beginning, was how do they come about these headsets that are recruiting these individuals for the aliens? And I think that world and everything like that will be answered a lot more in following seasons.
Yeah, they like sort of, they like barely touch the surface on how the VR headsets came about. Like, you know that it's, I don't remember the guy's name. The guy who dies, never mind. That's kind of a spoiler.
You can't say it. No,
he's on the boat in episode 5.
And I got you. We won't say who it is. We won't say who it is. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
But he's on the boat in episode 5. But like, you know that him and his crew are like monitoring these headsets.
Right.
Or like what's going on in the headsets. And you know that one character is the person that's bringing things in and out because she has access to technology that the aliens have. So like they like sort of touch like how these things
leave you wanting more.
But like where did they get this technology? Because you like in an early episode, Jack is like, is it Jack or is it, it's Jack. Jack is like, this is fifth generation technology. Like this is five generations from us. Like there's no way this would exist today. So it's just like odd how the aliens are so far away, but how did this technology get here?
Right. Something that's really respectable, and that we'll get into it here in a little bit, was that obviously the show has the possibility of being canceled. Something I found very fascinating was the fact that the end of it does not leave on a cliffhanger. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Like they wrap up everything. I was expecting one. That's what like I feel like we're prone to expecting when it comes to any show. You know, ooh, we got to watch next season. But things happen for sure, you know, astronomically big things. But they kind of say, all right, this is everything that happened in season one. The chess pieces, you know, are in place. We're going to, you know, capitalize on this for season two kind of thing. So yeah. I found it very, very interesting that they did that, made that decision.
It was I thought it was a good ending because it's like, it doesn't have a like nicely wrapped bow on it because like there's obviously still questions that need to be answered like we were just talking about. But for the most part,
it doesn't leave you on a cliffhanger. Though. That's
everything,
the thing.
Yeah, everything is like all the major things are wrapped up enough that you can just like assume this is where it's gonna go, or like you're just like, oh, I can see like what they could expand on in a future season, but like it's not necessary.
Yeah, and we don't know. And me and Zach have dived into this a little bit. I texted him about it yesterday, but we don't know necessarily if this is going to get another season. We hope. Would you recommend the show? Did you enjoy yourself even though you had to pay attention a little bit?
I enjoyed the show. I would recommend it. I would say like take your time with it so that you understand what you're watching.
I will say what I've saw from fans of the books as well is that this is just the beginning and this is like the easiest parts that aren't too insane and that the series just takes off from here.
Yeah, I can see that. Because they're okay, like they
you
fit... love
spoilers. You did not spoil yourself, did you?
No, I didn't. I have no idea what's supposed to happen in the second and third books. But just like going based off everything they crammed into one book / one season, I could see how much more they could cram into a second and third. It would be like, I don't know if you did any more research about Dune and like where it goes in the last,
it's like freaking Dune.
In the
like
last five books Dune. After book one. I don't know if you know anything about what happens in the next five books, but
do not ruin this for yourself.
Dune takes like such a wild turn that, like, things you would never expect. And I'm just like, they don't make any sense if you just, like, read the, like, bullet point plot of each book. And for this, I feel like the amount that they crammed into the first book, and it all still mostly made sense.
Yeah.
I would hope and expect that seasons 2 and 3 cram in like 3 times more, but still make way more sense than anything Dune did in the last books.
I hope there's more seasons just so you can resist the urge to spoil it for yourself. Because you do that.
I mean, but now that we're talking about it, I'll probably go and read what the hell is supposed to happen in the second and third books.
Don't do that. No, I mean, if it gets canceled, then maybe. So let's talk about that. So we found out, I texted Zach yesterday, but through research, this show cost $20 million an episode.
That's just insane. So
multiply that. Yes, very much so. Multiply that by 8, which there's 8 episodes, and that's $160 million. Well, we talked about it on the podcast. We made the comparison. I made the comparison to Zach over text message, is the fact that Avatar The Last Airbender, which I would think is a bigger deal to Netflix. It's a bigger property, more name brand. Even though these books are very famous, I think that there's more hope. And yeah, obviously from the numbers we're about to discuss, there's more assurity in Avatar The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. Those only cost $15 million an episode. So I believe the final total was $120 million for Avatar, $160 million for Three Body Problem, which is fine until you look at the viewership. So the viewership, when it came to the first week of Avatar The Last Airbender, was about 21 million viewers, or 21 million views. They kind of read it a different way. For Three Body Problem, it was only 11, which is not good, and it didn't debut at number one. The thing is, we gotta think about is usually when it comes to these, I think these charts, it only takes, because these shows usually release on like a weekend, something like that. It usually doesn't take a full week into account when it's the very first week. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the way Netflix does their like release the numbers thing is the way movies do it. So like most of their big shows release on a Thursday night now. Like movies release on Thursday nights. So then you get like box office numbers for the weekend. Which is how they,
at least for the new releases.
Yeah, for new releases at least.
So we're hoping, because like I said, we recommended the show. It's a little frightening that hopefully when the second week numbers come in, that the viewership is higher than 11 million. If it goes down, I don't see any hope in this show getting a renewal, because it's just too expensive for the amount of viewership that they're getting. I mean, Zach just released a video on Mindhunter. And that's exactly the reason why Mindhunter was canceled. David Fincher, the creators, come out and said, hey, we can't continue to make this show because it's expensive and it's not getting the viewership that Netflix wants. So, sorry about it. I mean, you're very familiar with why shows are canceled, so.
Yeah, like, and, like, it's just insane. Like, the fact that this was $20 million an episode was just making me think about the other video I posted earlier, or like last week, about Terra Nova and how that show was canceled because it was $4 million an episode. Like, that's just, and that was only what, 5 more episodes? Cause it's 13 episodes. So like, that's just insane. The fact that a show got canceled because it was 4 million. And then 13 years later, a show is $20 million an episode.
Yeah, it's just people are kind of ridiculous with money, I think, when it comes down today. You can say it's inflation, but obviously we don't know. I wish I knew more. Money just disappears, in my opinion. One thing that I can think of right off the top of my head is I know that the new Kung Fu Panda movie was only $85 million, but for some reason, every Disney animated film is always $200 million.
Every Disney film is $150 to $200 million, and I'm just like, if you're spending this much money on films that, like, this is something that, like,
I wish they did breakdowns. I really wish they did breakdowns. I don't think they'll do that. But I watched an interview recently with Lil Dicky, and he was talking about, he has a show on FX called Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the fact that when you're on these production sets, that even if you have a small flame or something, right, catches on fire, let's say a piece of paper, you have to have precautions and set, and you have to have like emergency crews on standby when it comes to these productions.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money that you have to pay for something so little.
I guess, that does make sense, because they also still are doing like a lot of productions are still doing like the COVID protocol, which I know like shut down a ton of movies and TV shows, just like outright canceled them because the cost was too much to like, they were already high budget, and then it was going to add another like, it was probably like 15% more money to do like COVID protocol stuff.
Yeah, it's just, I wish, just for me and you being part of, you know, the film, TV industry, I wish they would do numbers. That way we would understand better. That way we weren't so hard on them.
I mean, if they wanted to, they could, but they choose to let everybody critique them and roast them for canceling stuff that's good.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is maybe acting. Because when it comes to like Kung Fu Panda, the only thing I think of is Jack Black. I don't know how much they're paying Jack Black, but maybe when these other productions, when it comes to Wish or Elemental, maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt kind of a thing.
I mean, like, there was a report that just...
I don't understand. I'm trying to understand.
There was a deal that Timothée Chalamet just signed with WB, and he's not even making double digit millions yet on like being signed for movies. Like, this deal is what's going to get him into the double digits. I think he was only paid like $8 million for Wonka. I don't even think he was paid $8 million for Dune.
Yeah, he's only paid $3 million, but I think he has residuals, I believe.
But yeah, I mean, they have to.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something I probably won't speak on ever until right now, was the fact that I think Warner Brothers, there's little whispers here and there that Warner Brothers is setting up all of these deals to make themselves look better, because David Zaslav's going to sell the company.
I'm tired of this man, in all honesty. I'm making it like my life's goal at this point to be his arch nemesis. Because sucks.
You aren't the only one, trust me.
No, he literally is the worst. I need him to go away. I'm not going to say anything like tragic to him. I need him to either retire quietly and just like disappear into oblivion, or just step down right now.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I'm curious. I guess he might sell, because he was originally the CEO of Discovery. So yeah. I'm curious. I guess he's probably going to sell Discovery with it, because it's like a package deal now. So he doesn't care about Discovery anymore. I think he just cares about getting rid of everything.
Yeah, I mean, he just wants to get rid of the $42 billion in debt that they owe.
Yep. Speaking of large corporate, I feel like, yeah, when it comes to Disney too, I think it's very confusing over there right now, because I feel like they announce a new project every single day, but then they say
they have no money.
Well, no, yeah, they say they have no money, but they announce a new project every day when it comes to, specifically to Marvel, because I feel like that's the most that anything in that industry when it comes to Disney gets talked about. But then they say they're not going to rush anything, but then they keep on announcing stuff. Very confusing.
Yeah, like, they said that they're not doing Captain Marvel 3 and they're not doing Ant-Man 3, but then they just released yesterday, or, like, rumors were, like, brewing yesterday that they're planning to keep Carol Danvers around. She'll just be, like, bouncing from project to project, trying to find out where Monica Rambeau is and how to bring her back, and find out info about Kamala's bangles.
I think this is something I'm going to speak on, but it's the fact that supposedly there's a story that got announced yesterday that they are greenlitting Spider-Man 4, Zendaya's coming back, Tom Holland's coming back, and it's coming out this fall. Why that is a problem is because there's no writer and there's no director attached to it, which means the people who are creating this is the company itself. Nobody's actually a filmmaker creating
no
this.
No passion for the project.
No, it is just something on a conveyor belt that can hopefully... No Way Home made them $2 billion.
Yeah,
of course they're gonna do a Spider-Man 4.
Did you?
They'll pay Tom Holland $10 million. They'll pay Zendaya $10 million. And even though the movie might not be good, they're gonna come back because they're getting paid big bucks.
Did you hear what their plans are for Peter Parker?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I saw. Oh my god! It like I was gonna make a video about it, but I was just like so mad. I was like, just cancel the whole, like, cancel Spider-Man. I don't want it. If this is going to be the way they go with Peter Parker's character, they are trying to turn him into Batman. They want to, like the way that Bruce Wayne is Batman, not, and like Batman is his real identity. And like, that's how he thinks of himself. They want to do that with Peter Parker and like make Spider-Man be the main identity and Peter Parker starts to fade into oblivion and like he doesn't even really exist anymore because he's lost everyone close to him. And I'm like, the whole point of Peter Parker is to be fun, carefree, like a loving but like yet still serious character that finds the good in everything. He is literally the like antithesis of a superhero to Batman, where Batman is like his
I'm not too brushed up on like comics and stuff, but I think the thing is Batman wears his outfit to scare his villains, but then Spider-Man wears his outfit to hide his fear from villains because he's just as scared. So like I said, who's making these decisions though? They don't have a writer.
Exactly. Like, but that's like Marvel quote unquote, or Sony or whoever. It's the corporations wanting this to be the direction, and it's like, leave the creative direction to the creatives.
That's the thing that's really bugged me, and I might make a video about it, but the fact that Kevin Feige is the one who's leading all this. Kevin Feige, yes, he did a good job when it came to the first three entries, did a great job. You know, he did something that's never been done before, made a huge universe. But the thing is, he's never been a filmmaker, ever.
Yeah.
He's not a writer. He's never been a director. He's a producer. That is the only thing he's done. Differentiate that from James Gunn, who is a writer, who is a director, who knows how to put stories together. And I just think you have the wrong person leading this entire thing, and he's blaming other people than himself. And I think he should have been let go a long time ago. But it's okay. Speaking of Marvel, there's a certain actor who's appeared a lot in the Phase 4 of it, who we're going to speak about, who's in Three Body Problem. Wong. Good old Benedict Wong, I really liked his role in Three Body Problem a lot. I feel like he was like the one we could connect with the most because he's not a physicist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's normal.
Yeah, and I really like, he's normal. Yeah, his personal life in the series actually seemed the most relatable as well. He just has a son who he's just trying to connect with and can't connect with. It's a very basic story. And his son at the end kind of gets roped into everything that's happening a little bit, but I think he did a really great job. How did you like him? We're going to talk about the underrated movie that not a lot of people have seen called 9 Days. And this also stars Benedict Wong, stars Bill Skarsgård, Zazie Beetz, and Winston Duke. So it's funny because all these people I feel like are just... Bill Skarsgård's kind of taken off this year.
He has,
He has three films coming out.
Got The Crow. What else does he have? The Crow. He has a movie next month, but I can't remember the name of it. But like, I sent it to you on Instagram, and I was like, why is this the first I'm ever seeing of this?
I'll give you a pass if you can get the second one. I'll give you a hint. It's another horror film.
I have no idea.
Nosferatu.
Oh, okay.
So playing, I believe it's Dracula is the Nosferatu story. But yeah, he's playing that comes out on Christmas. And then the one that you're thinking of is Boy Kills World.
Yeah, that one.
Boy Kills World comes out at the end of this month. So he's kind of like becoming a big star, which is, I think he always had that talent. I think he was kind of fit into a box a little bit with the It franchise kind of thing.
That's funny you say that because when I was watching the trailer for The Crow, the remake of The Crow, I was like, all I see is Pennywise. But when I watched the trailer for the other two, I promo for the other two things, I don't see Pennywise. It's just The Crow, and I think it's because of like the makeup they end up putting on him.
Unfortunately, I think this is exactly what he needs. I'm looking at his filmography right now. He hasn't had a whole lot of big breaks since, like I said, his face is covered up when it comes to playing Pennywise. So I think this is exactly what he needs. One thing I really hope for, it's kind of a big tangent here, talking about Bill Skarsgård. We're connecting these two projects with Benedict Wong. Is the fact that they've showed stills from Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. They've showed Willem Dafoe. They've showed Nicholas Holtz in this film. They've only showed like a little bit of the side of Bill Skarsgård's face. And I thought, how cool would that be if they never show him until the movie? I don't think that's going to become a reality because...
Probably not, but that would be good promo. Like,
we have to see what he looks like.
Yeah, you know? But that would be good. That would be a good like way to promote the movie because like, people don't aren't supposed to know that Dracula exists. So like,
basically, yeah.
That would be like the theme of the promo is like, you'll never know until you go.
You gotta be the one that does the marketing for them.
I saw a video on TikTok today that was talking about how to get into film and TV marketing, which is like something that I always wanted to do and why I started doing marketing as like my full-time job. And then I found nothing online. I've only found the one video that was like, this is what I do for work. And I was like, oh, let me go do a bunch of research on how to get into this. And nothing.
It'll come to you.
There's no jobs.
Especially because we spoke about it. You got some great opportunities possibly from people in the industry now, which is insane. Good for you. You deserve that. So hopefully when you talk to more and more people, you build more relationships with them, you'll get like in.
Yeah.
Figure out like how the game's played basically when it comes to the industry.
Yeah, it's just a learning curve, but oh well.
Yeah, we'll get there. 9 days though. So speaking of getting there, hopefully soon, the person who directs this film, we talked about it. This is a very good film. It's very slow. Zach said it took him some time to get into it. Read up on it. I told him not to read up on it, but he did.
I read the log line.
Nope. I went in completely blind.
I read the long log line, and that was it.
One sentence too many. One sentence
okay,
too
well,
many.
I like to at least know what the nope. film is about.
Nope. So basically, the story of this film is very simple. It's also simply shot as well. You basically are. This is a very cheap film to make. I can see right off the bat. The most expensive part of this film is probably the casts. But even then, they're not huge name actors. Like we talked about Bill Skarsgård, not a big name actor usually when this is right after It Part Two. As we said, he wasn't still that big after It Part Two. And he's not even the lead of this movie. Definitely not.
Yeah.
But basically, I'm going to read it. A reclusive man conducts a series of interviews with human souls for a chance to be born. Is that what you read?
I don't think that was the log line I read.
So basically, Winston Duke plays a dead man, I would say, who lives in, let's call it, not really a purgatory, just a place beyond Earth where different individuals...
It's like pre-birth purgatory.
Pre-birth purgatory. Purgatory usually sounds bad, though, so I don't want to say that it's a bad place. Yeah. There's just no one there. And Winston Duke has lived a life, and he's died, but now he's tasked with the decision of... Well, what happens is basically Winston Duke has chosen different souls to go on and live a life on Earth. And in his home, there's multiple television screens, probably 15, 20 of them, that all are like a POV of these people living their lives. And he keeps record of them, and he enjoys watching them. And Benedict Wong is like his buddy. Ko, I believe, is his name in the film.
I think it's Kyo.
He like plays his buddy who he's never lived before. And he plays his buddy, and basically the two of them together invite 7 to 8 souls into their home, and through monitoring them watching, they've never lived a life before, and through monitoring them on their watching of other people living their lives and also asking them questions based on what they've seen, they choose Winston Duke primarily. Benedict Wong's kind of there just as an advisor. But who out of all these individuals are the best suited to live a life on Earth? Very, very interesting. And something happens right at the beginning. I don't think it's a spoiler, but one of the people dies who he's watching. And this really shakes up Winston Duke for the entire film. And you figure out basically why as the runtime goes on. But I thought it was a genius idea just for a low budget movie.
Yeah.
The exploration of life. You figure out through these characters, because the littlest things stick out to them when you've never experienced life before, whether it's, you know, holding a barbecue, having time on the beach, riding a bicycle. So it's cool to see what might catch someone's eyes who's never lived before watching life itself. But then also why someone being Winston Duke would choose not to put someone on Earth and not choose them. And then Zazie Beetz is kind of her own. She's the main person when it comes to these people getting chosen. Oh, and it takes 9 days. 9 days to choose them.
Well, not necessarily, but the process is 9 days, but you might not make it through 9 days.
True. Yeah, 9 days is the extent of how much time Winston Duke gives all these people.
Yeah.
You might not make it. You might get eliminated. One thing that's funny, if anybody listened to our, was it our last episode that we did with Love Lies Bleeding?
Yeah.
Is that Tony Hale, which was in the recommended movie that we did last week, American Ultra, he's also in this movie. And that was very funny.
Yeah. In very different roles, though.
Yeah, he's mostly known for Veep. We talked about that. I've never seen Veep, but I've seen clips of him. I've seen the Julia Dreyfus, her on stage, and she brought him up on stage when she's won an award. I feel like that's a like, very iconic clip.
Yeah.
But he is a little bit humorous in this, definitely, out of all the characters, but he also plays a pretty serious role, so that was really cool to see from him. But yeah, I thought it was a kind of a beautiful film when just looking at it from a story perspective and a filmmaking perspective. The director, I believe, also, let me see here, he also wrote it. Like I said, he's never done anything since, and this is very much a critically acclaimed film as well. I believe Benedict Wong might have gotten an award for it, possibly. I'll have to check on that, for the Independent Film Awards. So just super, super interesting. I'm glad you liked it, because I recommended it for us.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was a very interesting take on like the meaning of life, almost, because you see, like, you always see movies or like books or just like media in general is always talking about like the meaning of life from the afterlife perspective, and like what happens after life is always like a thing that you see, but you almost never see the meaning of life pre-life, and you also never really see what is before life. It was just like such an interesting take, because it, like, you could have, like, a lot of times it's from the perspective of like regret, like things you love on earth or like things you loved in life is from the perspective of regret, and this one was like a very refreshing like perspective of excitement, like what about life is exciting to you because you haven't lived it yet, as opposed to it's just like I don't even know how you would get into that mindset to write this and like think of like the beach is something that like somebody would be so excited to do, or like there's one scene where Zazie Beetz is describing something that's disgusting to her, and it's a scene like she's describing an interaction she watched of people hooking up, and one girl had like a huge shit in the toilet and couldn't get it to flush, and so like she stabs it with a toothbrush, and then her hookup uses the toothbrush without her knowing after they had made out for 5 minutes. So it's just like things like that, that you're just like, where, first of all, one, where do you come up with this? Second of all, how do you even get into the mindset of thinking of things from the perspective of like before life?
And it's funny because everything you're saying is absolutely true, and I agree with all of it. But even with me saying that, I think the most beautiful moments of the film that I enjoyed that isn't really in the script, there's no words that are being spoken, is after Winston Duke rejects somebody. He says, hey, you know, you're not what I'm looking for. I don't think you'll be good on Earth. He chooses to ask them what moment they've witnessed did they really love. And he recreates that for them. And those scenes, I think there's two primarily, maybe three, but are beautiful. Dude, I think they're practical too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. There's no CGI. It's like he tries to recreate a scene on the beach. He tries to recreate somebody riding a bicycle down a street. Him and, you know, trying to be the focus of this episode, but him and Benedict Wong together. And it's really, really beautiful and incredible and a really good idea. And I love those moments. They're probably my favorite part of the film by far, in my opinion. But
yeah, I really like those moments too, just because they were like,
it's just simple.
It's simple, really simple, and it's just like, even
it's something I've never seen before.
It's just like a way to teach kindness almost.
Yeah.
Even though they're not going to live a life, he's still showing them and like teaching them kindness and like what it is to be human, I guess.
Yeah, I made when I wrote my review of it, I made the comment, have you ever done the ride Soarin'? Ever? Yeah, I said this is like a better Soarin'. Because Soarin', once you do Soarin' like one time, it gets kind of old, to be honest. So this is like a 40X theater, you know, shaking you combined with Soarin', combined with simplicity, I guess.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really good. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's been on my watch list for a really long time, so I'm very thankful that we were able to, you know, bust it out. I'm glad that you liked it because I know I recommended it. Are you excited for the recommended movie we're doing this week, our next episode?
Godzilla.
Godzilla, the original Godzilla. So yeah. I'm excited, from 1954.
I don't think I've ever actually watched it.
I've never watched it either. No. So we'll, I've heard it's good. So we're going to recommend it. Hopefully we haven't been lied to. we have been told it's good. But the thing is that we are going to watch Godzilla X Kong. It's not Times Kong. I think, or I made a video.
It's not Times. It's not Times, and it's not Versus. It's Godzilla X Kong.
The New Empire.
Yeah, I think I've seen all of the movies in this timeline.
I might have to pull a U. I have as well. I recently rewatched the first Godzilla. I guess this is getting into next week's episode. I rewatched it recently. I might do what you do and do a, you know, the breakdown, look up some videos, know everything Yeah, know everything about the MonsterVerse and Monarch. They had a show on Apple Plus.
TV Plus. I haven't watched that.
No, you got to do a breakdown.
Apparently, that's a really good show, though, and like it's on my list of things to get to.
I'm not surprised, because Apple TV usually has pretty decent shows.
Apple TV is so underrated, and they don't cancel stuff. They like almost never cancel something.
It's not about the money.
Yeah, for them, they're just trying to like that's where everybody should be going. Creatives, viewers, go get invested in an Apple TV show, because like everything is good. Even that show with Jason Momoa, like ratings terrible for it. Everybody said
they gave it 3 seasons.
Gave it 3 seasons and let it wrap up its story.
Yep. Insane. That'd be an interesting thing to dive into and to write about, kind of.
The Apple TV and like why it's the new age for creatives and why everybody should go there.
Well, not Netflix. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's more outlandish stuff on Netflix, but yeah, Apple TV, if you really want to, Mindhunter, you talked about, should have been created on Apple TV, but yeah, it wasn't available back then.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing yet.
But yeah, so we're excited to talk about Godzilla next week. Please tune in if you guys want to. There's going to be a lot of talks about monkeys, a lot of talks about lizards. Also, there's a red ape. I'm trying to think about everything from the trailers that I can think of.
There's a baby Godzilla or baby King Kong.
Yeah, I know there's like 50 Godzilla movies. We will not be covering all of those. I don't think we can get those.
Are you talking about like old ones or the 2014 onward? Because there's still a few.
No. Yeah, we won't be covering, and we don't have the knowledge of all of those. But
no, I could not tell you much about the MonsterVerse.
Yeah, I know Mothra is a favorite, though.
Mothra is a favorite. There's... what is the three-headed Hydra?
We gotta research. We'll get into it. We'll get into it next
episode. There's a lot.
We'll be fully researched in all of the
kaiju. We will be kaiju experts. Kaiju connoisseurs.
Yeah, you just wait until you hear all the knowledge that we're going to be spitting next.
Because we're seeing the movie. I'm seeing the movie tomorrow night.
Yeah, I am as well, I think. I think I'm going to go showing at 10 p.m. So stay tuned for that. But we do recommend Three Body Problem. Hopefully it does not get canceled. Fingers crossed. I'll be texting Zach about it.
If it does get canceled, maybe we'll be the ones to start the fan campaign to have Apple pick it up.
You can do it right afterwards, like why it was canceled. That'd be good. Yep,
I'll pre-make this video.
Yeah.
Drop it the minute the news is announced.
We predicted this.
And then be like, and here's why Apple should pick it up.
They're genius. Look at this. Also, 9 Days, pretty good movie.
9 Days, really, great.
Really beautiful, small, independent movie that you haven't really seen anything like it before. So
yeah,
two good ones we talked about today, The Fresh and The Forgotten. But yeah, stay tuned. You know, follow us on our podcasts, on our accounts, whatever. Please support us. It's good talking with you, Zach.
Yeah, good talking with you.